Thank you so much for joining us and joining us today. It's a pleasure to welcome Jeffrey Pfeffer. He is a professor of organizational behavior at the Graduate School of Business at Stanford University. He is a prolific author. He has written some 15 different books, either author or co-authored, 15 different books, and the newest one, Dying for a Paycheck: How Modern Management Harms Employee Health and Company Performance and What We Can Do About It, by Jeffrey Pfeffer. Am I saying that right?
Yes.
Dying for a Paycheck. Obviously, the title caught my attention, but when we think about dying for a paycheck, one of the first things that comes to my mind is unsafe working conditions. Maybe some place that is like a production line, a manufacturing facility, a steel mill, where they a coal mine where they just don't follow the safety rules, and all of a sudden something explodes. But really, a lot of that goes over to OSHA, the Occupational Safety and Health Administration. And while that is still definitely a concern, OSHA has actually done a pretty good job about cleaning up the workplace over the years.
That is correct. OSHA has done a fabulous job of cleaning up what I would call the physical hazards. What OSHA has not been really permitted to do is clean up the hazards of workplace stress, which are substantial.
Now, and when you first are reading through the book, Dying for a Paycheck, and you read workplace stress, you may think, oh, well, everybody's got a little bit of stress in their work. What's the big deal? What is the big deal?
Well, the big deal is that some people have a little bit of stress, but many people have a considerable amount of stress. Stress that comes from long work hours, which, of course, we now have a lot of research on sleep and how important sleep is to the immune system and the functioning of the endocrine system, and you cannot sleep if you're at work. And many people are working longer and longer hours, and even when they're not at work, they are expected to be on and on call and on their cell phone and working from home. So that would be one source of stress. Another source of stress would be work-family conflict, which is not unrelated to the idea that, you know, you're working all the time and therefore you're not able to fulfill family responsibilities, and that leads to a certain amount of stress as well. And then there's the stress that comes from economic insecurity, layoffs, and we're moving now ever more to a gig economy where people don't have really jobs, and so they don't really know how much money they're going to make from one week to the next or where they're going to get their next gig and so on and so forth. And that is a source of stress. And there's a stress that comes from an absence of control over your work environment where you have a boss that micromanages you. Many people will experience that as stressful. You're not able to control when and how you do your work. And so you're in some sense live in a infantilized state where you're not really in control of how you're doing and what you're doing. So there are many, many, many sources of workplace stress, and there's one more I would mention, and that is companies over the last decade or two have cut back their health benefits. Some have given up offering health insurance completely, and those that still offer health insurance have shifted costs to the employee in terms of co-payments and deductibles and so on and so forth. So a significant fraction of the American workforce, even those with health insurance, find it difficult to pay for all of their needed care and all of their prescription drugs, and that leads to a source of financial stress as well as insecurity about whether or not they're going to be able to take care of themselves. So there's a lot of stresses in the workplace today, and those stresses exact a toll on both people's psyche and on their physical conditions.
And the economic impact, what are we looking at as far as the cost of this stress?
Well, there are different answers to that. Two colleagues and I have estimated that the direct medical costs of health conditions caused by the things I've just referred to, it's about $190 billion a year. The American Institute of Stress estimates a cost to employers and productivity losses of about $300 billion. It is economically significant, and so and not only is it economically significant, it's significant in terms of lost life. The same two colleagues in operations research and I estimated about 120,000 deaths per year to come from the things we've talked about, these kind of workplace exposures, which would make the workplace the fifth leading cause of death in the United States, worse than Alzheimer's or kidney disease, for instance. So that's a lot of people who are dying, a lot of money that's being lost because we are not managing our workforce properly. And by the way, this is not just in the United States. Australia has a comparable problem, and they talk about $15 billion. Of course, it's a much smaller economy, lost to workplace stress, and the United Kingdom is also has data that suggests a significant fraction of lost work days are because of this. And one survey, and I'll end with this comment, and I'll let you ask me another question. One survey said that about 50% of people have lost time at work because of workplace stress or workplace stress-induced illness, and 7% of them had been hospitalized, which is, I think, a shockingly high percentage.
And just the idea that you're talking about 120,000 deaths that are attributed to this annually. So the title of the book, Dying for a Paycheck, that's not hyperbole.
No, it's not.
Unfortunately. So how did workplaces become so toxic?
I think workplaces became toxic in a variety of, and for a variety of different reasons. One is the evolving economy, with the gig economy, with people facing more economic insecurity, the increasing frequency of layoffs in good times and in bad. You get companies that merge with other companies and lay off a significant fraction of the workforce. That, of course, is very stressful. I think another way, but I think the fundamental way that companies have become this bad is because in the olden days, like in the 1950s, which I understand is not that long ago, I think many CEOs thought of themselves as managing and trying to balance the demands of a set of constituencies, customers, suppliers, certainly employees, as well as shareholders. And they saw their job as one of stewardship. Today, I think many CEOs see their job as simply maximizing shareholder return and not really caring about the other stakeholders, particularly the employees, who I think they see as dispensable. So on the one hand, at one point, organizations felt very much like communities. And people, worked with the same organization for a long time and had an attachment to the organization, and the organization had attachment to them.
Indeed, they were part of the community. I mean, the manager or CEO of a company may be living on the same street with many of the people that they work with. In the past.
In the past, yes. Not so much today, with CEO salaries at 200 times the average employee salary. I would not think that many people are living actually kind of that close.
Yeah.
But also, I think there's been a change in the idea of what it means to run a company. As I said, in the olden days, I think there was a sense of stewardship. And today it's basically just about the shareholders. And so the sense of responsibility to the employees, I think, has changed. I think that's one significant difference that has contributed to the issues that we see.
And it's reflected in how we talk about the issue and how businesses are referred to and refer to the employee-employer relationship. Employees are frequently referred to as cost or expenses these days.
Yes, yes, absolutely. And ours, human capital,
yeah.
Or as, human resources. As one of my friends said, steel is a resource, people are people. But yes, I think you're exactly right. I mean, we have, and because we now have more outside succession into CEO roles, it's not unexpected that a CEO comes in from outside who does not know the people that he's working with or she's working with, because they haven't, they haven't grown up together or worked together, is gonna have a different attitude towards these, if you will, strangers, than that individual would if they had grown up inside the organization and had, a different set of relationships with the people.
Also, our healthcare system is just a mess, and so many people do not have health insurance or health care coverage of some sort or another. And if they don't have that, then when something comes along, well, they're just out in the cold.
That is certainly right. Well, there's a bunch of studies that suggest that, by the way, they're not going to, if you don't have health insurance, you don't get screened for health conditions. So when the conditions arise, they're more advanced, and this is true for things such as various forms of cancer and so on and so forth. So that's one issue. You don't have access to healthcare screening. But what's interesting is even in organizations that ostensibly offer health insurance, a significant fraction of people, some estimates are as high as a third, don't avail themselves of that health insurance either because it's too expensive, or they're not eligible because they don't work sufficient numbers of hours, or they haven't worked there for a sufficient period of time. So even companies that are offering health insurance face a problem that some of their workforce, a reasonable fraction thereof, can't avail themselves of that health insurance. No health insurance equals no health care. No health care equals no health.
Mm, very true. So what are the elements of a healthy workplace?
The elements of a healthy workplace are really several. First of all, and most importantly, we know, again, from a lot of social science research, that one of the things that helps people cope with stress and that mitigates stress is social support. So one of the elements of a healthy workplace is a place where people are brought together they may work in teams, or they're brought together for social events and celebrations. And so there is a sense of community that is created, and people feel that they have friends and work colleagues that they can rely on and can ask advice from and provide them social support and sympathy in times of difficulty. Some organizations, Southwest Airlines would be one, DaVita, the kidney dialysis company, would be another, have collect money, and so that if you've had some kind of setback or some kind of problem and you're an employee, your workmates will contribute and the organization will contribute, and they'll actually help you over the financial hurdle. So certainly I think social support is one element of a healthy workplace. The other element of a healthy workplace, which is really fundamental, is giving people a sense of job control, a sense of control over what they do. I mean, it's interesting to me that organizations hire people for their experience and their intelligence and their skills, and then they say, by the way, I don't want you to use that intelligence and skills. I want you to do what I tell you to do. Hmm. And so healthy workplaces give people autonomy and social support. Those are two key, really key elements.
So why do people stay in workplaces that are unhealthy, that are literally toxic for them?
I think there's several answers to why people stay in workplaces that are killing them. One is that I think all of your listeners will well appreciate, finding a job is a job in itself. Mm-hmm. So if you are physically exhausted and psychologically stressed, oftentimes people don't have the energy to go out and look for a job, which is itself, of course, a taxing activity. I think that's one reason. Another reason is many organizations will say, you know, aren't you good enough? If you were any good, you'd be able to you'd be able to cope with the situation. And people like to believe that they're tough and they're strong and they can power through it. And particularly when you're told, you know, aren't you good enough? If you were any good, you know, if you were doing something really amazing, we're changing the world, whatever we're doing in this organization. And if you were any good, you'd be able to cope. And so I think people don't want to admit that they can't cope with the workplace or with the work stresses, that they're tough enough to do it. So I think that's a second.
So businesses are able to just literally pile on task after task after task, and if somebody isn't living up to it, then you're not cutting the mustard. And if you're not cutting the mustard at this level, good luck trying to get an advancement to the next level. Hang on just a moment. We're talking with Jeffrey Pfeffer, P-F-E-F-F-E-R. The book is Dying for a Paycheck, and it's literally happening. It's not hyperbole. Dying for a Paycheck. We'll continue in just a moment. Thank you so much for joining us. Our guest, Jeffrey Pfeffer, and the book is Dying for a Paycheck, How Modern Management Harms Employee Health and Company Performance and What We Can Do About It. And I want to get to that part about what we can do about it. In some regards, it follows the social justice of the jungle, if you will. There was a time in this country where we didn't pay much attention to workplace dangers, and the jungle dealt with the issue of the workplace dangers in a meatpacking plant some 100 years ago. Well, that's changed. Now many people are working in office jobs, service jobs, but they are still facing health issues, significant health issues that literally, not figuratively, literally is killing them. So then the question is, what can we do about it? And how, I think one of the things that you mentioned in the book, we have to start measuring this.
I think that's absolutely crucial. The quality movement has taught us that those things we measure, we pay attention to, and the things we ignore tend to get worse. So if I want to improve situations, the first thing I have to understand is where they are, so I know whether or not interventions are making them better or worse. And so measurement and getting a baseline measure is absolutely fundamentally essential. And I said there are two relatively simple measures that particularly large organizations, but maybe even small ones, can access. One is many companies give out surveys to their employees, and there's a single item, self-reported health, which basically asks people how healthy they are on a 5 or 7 point scale. And it turns out the single item measure of self-reported health prospectively predicts subsequent mortality and healthcare costs. So you can ask people, and then I think employers ought to be responsible for improving the level of self-reported health in their workforce. A second kind of interesting thing to do is you can measure prescription drug use. There are some companies where employees will tell you, I went to work for this place, and 1 week later I started on antidepressants.
So literally, you know, like we go into a restaurant and there is a Board of Health plaque up on the wall, this restaurant gets an A rating, this restaurant gets a C-. If we did the same thing with businesses, which business would want to be rated an F? You wouldn't want to work for them. You wouldn't want to do business with them.
That's exactly right. And the self-reported health would be one measure, and then the prescription drug stuff, particularly antidepressants, sleeping pills, and the ADHD drugs, which many people take to stay awake and try to improve their mental performance.
I want to touch on.
And you can see those. You can see those. You can see that in the prescription data on healthy workplaces.
I also want to touch on this. There are a lot of health issues that are basically shifted, health costs that are shifted from employers to the public. And an example of that is that there are a lot of people on Medicaid or state versions of Medicaid who are working adults. One of the most egregious examples of this is Walmart. They don't pay their people enough, and they don't provide health insurance for their workers. So where do the workers go for health insurance? They go over to Medicaid. They go on the public dole.
Yes, there's been enormous amounts of cost shifting. That's one example. Another example would be if I work you so many hours or under so much stress that you become unable to work. You then also go on the public, if you will, on the public rolls. So companies have externalized their costs onto the larger society. Walmart, I actually think, is trying to now take some steps to move in a different direction. Because one of the interesting things is, of course, if you're sick and if you're stressed, you don't do your best work.
Yeah.
And so so we've really created a lose-lose situation where companies are not benefiting from this either.
Exactly. Dying for a Paycheck. This is a very important book. It's one that we need to understand, we need to get a better grasp of, because it's costing us a fortune, and it's in many cases costing people their lives. Dying for a Paycheck, How Modern Management Harms Employee Health and Company Performance and What We Can Do About It, by Jeffrey Pfeffer, Dying for a Paycheck. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me on your program.